Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Steve Bertrand is the host of Chicago's Afternoon News. Got a lot of good people over there on the air and off the air putting together what is the most informative show. I was in the car a lot yesterday. I drove out to and from Vernon Hills, so I caught about, I would say 3 hours. Steve, I heard about 3 hours of your show yesterday.
You know, that's great because I only caught about 2.5.
There are times I got done, I go, what happened?
So, yeah, I love that.
First of all, I just want to play a clip from your show because, and it's you, but you were just citing some statistics that I think were listed in the Tribune, and I found some of this fascinating.
And prescription pills stolen from pharmacies. Walgreens and CVS stores were hit particularly hard. 300,000 instant lottery tickets were stolen. 3,000 license plate and registration stickers were stolen. You know, we talked to Alderman Riley in the days after this, and others were saying that these were orchestrated events and people were targeting things. The looters were very much organized. When you come away with numbers like that, it looks as if they were going into places knowing what they were looking for.
There was an element, I don't know how extensive the element was, of organized looting. I mean, there were caravans.
It's Todd Leidy, the reporter for the Tribune. We missed the very beginning of that, but it was hundreds of thousands of prescriptions stolen, 300,000 lottery tickets, et cetera, et cetera. Steve, did we ever come to a conclusion about the origin of these organized caravans? The mayor said it was organized, and we're going to get them. I never heard who the them was and if we got them or not.
You mean as far as the organization, the head organizers and things like that?
Yeah, of the looting and rioting that took place last year.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there was some. There are pieces in this great Tribune piece that everyone should read about the fact that gang leaders were monitoring radio traffic from police, and they knew that officers had been taken out of the neighborhoods and moved to downtown and things like that. But as far as the, you know, was there one or two people orchestrating it? I have not seen that, John.
And we asked Kim Fox to come on, too, and ask about the disposition of some of these people. And she was unable to join us today. But I know people were very frustrated before, during, and after with the idea that there wouldn't be sufficient punishment for these people either. And if there has been, they should do a better job promoting that fact, because I think people are still frustrated about the outcome of those cases, Steve.
Well, keep in mind, John, that criminal trials in Cook County have really only just resumed.
That's right.
In the past few weeks. So yeah. I don't know how much could be done by now.
And, you know, the other thing is that a lot of that was, and I remember the conversations along these lines, say somebody kicks down a glass wall at the Gap store downtown or the whatever store, the camera store, right? And then somebody runs in and they run out. What's the crime they committed? A crime, but it's not the sort of thing that's going to put you in jail for years. So I think even if there was vigorous prosecution of these people, it still wouldn't be satisfactory to a lot of folks. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. So the crimes individually aren't things that are going to send people to prison for a long time.
Absolutely. The whole,
the sum
is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It looked worse than on any individual basis it actually was.
Right. Now, if they can find the people who were stealing the Illinois license plates or the stickers, you know, that's pretty fascinating, because as Todd Leidy explained, they would use those on stolen cars. So perhaps there's a carjacking this spring. Police are looking up a plate that doesn't exist in their system because it was taken from a currency exchange. Or, you know, the hundreds of thousands, was it, of instant lottery tickets?
300,000, yeah.
300,000. So, you know, that could not have been an accident. What's interesting to me is the state lottery was able to declassify or deregister those tickets. So the ones they stole, actually, most of them anyway, pretty quickly became useless.
Well, I'm not persuaded, Steve, that it wasn't just random. And there's no consolation in this, I suppose, because what it means is that there's a population of people that, given the opportunity, the notion, say, that some cops are not in an area or that there's some unrest that they can capitalize on, that they won't just descend and start looting and rioting. It was a particular moment, but I was never persuaded that it was quote-unquote organized.
Well, I think it certainly was organic in its origins, and there likely were people who tried to exploit it within that. So you're right. Overall, this was a sort of spontaneous event. But once that happened, and you know, the other thing I want to say is not to excuse at all anything that happened, but there is this mob mentality that creeps up on us, and yeah. You know, we all sometimes do things. I don't break windows and steal things, but you know, we all sort of do get emboldened when the crowd is emboldened.
Well, I probably shouldn't say this, but I think you saw that on January 6th. There were a lot of people who never thought they would commit a federal crime. They did. And now they're just saying, I was part of that scene.
I think that's a great example, perfect example.
I'm not sure if it is, because every time you talk about January 6th, people say, well, what about last summer? Where's the prosecution or the persecution of those people? I'm all for it. I think you should throw all of them in jail. They are different crimes. They're on a different scale. One was trying to overthrow, say, was trying to stop the counting of the votes for the president of the United States. The other one was something different. But I don't want to go soft on either group. That's for sure.
No, I agree. I'm with you.
Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm golfing with my high school buddies in Kankakee. Is that okay? Can you hold on? I'm on the 18th hole.
Go ahead.
No, we're wrapping up.
I can do play-by-play of your hook anytime.
It's a sand and water.
Are those the ones that get you?
Absolutely.
If there is a pile of sand, well, if there's a pond of water in front of me, sometimes the water, there's some golf courses where the water starts shortly after the tee box, and of course you can hit it over that, but I think about it. Don't hit it in the water. Don't hit it in the water.
And then it goes in the water.
It goes in the water. That's just what
I do. I've actually dug wells with some of my drivers.
I also just wanted to tell you, I heard your conversation yesterday. Who was that with where you were talking about lying to juveniles when they're trying to make a case? Can you catch us up on that conversation?
Yeah, it's a very interesting, I think. That was State Senator Robert Peters. He's the chair of the Senate Black Caucus. But this was a bill that was bipartisan. Jim Durkin, the Republican leader of the House, supported it as well. Currently, it is legal for police officers to lie to juveniles when they're interrogating them. So they might say, we've got your fingerprints on the gun, or your mom said you weren't home, or anything like that in order to get a confession. And, you know, the people have said that leads to coerced confessions, that leads to wrongful imprisonment, and the legislature agreed when it comes to juveniles that police no longer can lie to them. Now, they can lie to adults when they're interrogating them, and, you know, Senator Peter says he doesn't like that either. That might be down the road, but they could get broad agreement when it comes to juveniles, so that's what passed.
I'm amazed at both of those. I'm so naive. I thought that if they found out that you lied, they'd throw the case out.
It's not the case. I mean, I think a lot of people might be surprised. And I think you'll probably find a lot of officers who say it's a useful tool, but it certainly puts the interrogatee, is that the word, under undue pressure, you know, if he's being told that there's all this evidence against him and he didn't do it.
Well,
they also could tell stories like, tell us the truth right now. Tell us you did it, and then you can go home to your family. And of course, then they say they did it, and they can't go home to their family.
Yeah, I understand that.
Things like that.
I know you brought that example up to him, but I'm more worried about instances where they just fabricate evidence. You know, where they say, hey, we've got your fingerprints on the gun. They don't have your fingerprints on the gun, and they can't find the gun anyway, but they say that. Now the guy confesses. Steve, I don't want to take any tools away from the investigators, and if for some reason or another they know that this is the guilty party, then maybe I shouldn't be too worried about what they say to him, because this guy should go to jail. But I think too often we've seen instances where the opposite is true, where the police are bad actors, or in this case maybe the inspector, the investigator, and they should not be able to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and police might sometimes be doing it with, I don't know if good intentions is the right word, but they may well believe that they do have the person, and if they put the screws to them, they can move the process along. But we've seen in Illinois that that has led to dozens and dozens of wrongful convictions.
Well, the argument that, well, then don't confess, you know, forget what they say, just the truth will out. But there's plenty of studies that show that people, because they're fatigued or because, especially in the case of a juvenile, they think it'll at least get them out of this terrible room with these bad men and women who are asking them questions. I'll just lie and then I can go home now. That happens all the time.
Right. And that's a problem.
All right. Well, I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. Well, he did say the governor will probably sign that legislation.
Yeah, it was the juvenile law was bill was widely accepted by both parties. So I think that he says the governor will sign it.
All right. What did you shoot today, by the way?
Oh my! I'm thinking at 152 right now. I don't know. I'm a terrible golfer.
We're doing a
four person scramble. So.
Oh well, then that's okay. Then your bad shots don't count.
Exactly. And if I can contribute at one or two holes, that's a win.
That is a good feeling. And then you start to keep mental score like, well, how many of my shots did we use versus your shots, right?
Right, right. Three.
All right, Steve. Well, are you going to be doing your show since you're in Arkansas right now or wherever you are?
I'm at the beautiful Kankakee Country Club, and I will definitely be there for the show coming up at 4 o'clock.
It's 11:54. You know that, right?
It's only an hour and a half away.
All right. Well, drive all safely, right. Steve. We'll listen for your show.
If I don't make it, you'll be there, right?
I usually am, so
I know.
Thank you very little. I'm hanging up on you now.
Bye, John.